Good morning. Welcome to Genesis. We're glad you're hanging out with us this morning. We're second week into a series that we're calling Welcome to the Planet that is really looking at why we're here. What's our purpose for existence? We're doing this in conjunction with a whole church emphasis on the book, The Purpose-Driven Life by Rick Warren. If you haven't picked up the book, it's not too late to jump in on this. We have copies left at the book table. We'd love for you to pick one of those up. Just kind of read along with us. Jump into a community group. If you're not in a community group, jump into one right now. If you're not sure where to go or what to do with a community group, but you would like to, there's a red card out at the table. You can fill that out and just tell us nights you could go to a group. We can kind of connect you. Or go to our website and you can just look at the groups online and fill out a registration there. We can get you plugged in. Or just call me and I'll hook you up and make sure that we can get you in a group. In our groups, we're literally doing a video series from the guy who wrote the book that just kind of challenges and kind of helps us focus on the ideas that are contained in the book itself. And here's why. The elders, a while back, we were talking about just where we're going and what we need to preach on and what we need to do in our church and those sorts of things. And we chose to do this as a church-wide campaign because we feel like what's happening here at Genesis is that we have a lot of people who are maybe a little more seasoned in their faith, that maybe they grew up in church, or maybe they've been going to church for a long time. And for those people, it's very easy to get in a rhythm of doing life and faith without really thinking about why. But we also have a lot of people in our church, the faith thing is really kind of new. You're just, maybe you grew up in a background where you didn't go to church, or you went to a church that didn't really push you towards doing anything other than showing up on Sunday morning. And we just really want to encourage people who are new in the faith to start developing some patterns, some attitudes, some rhythms in their life that will help them figure out what it looks like to live this thing called the Christian life, to help you just work through the struggles. You know, a lot of times what will happen is you'll come to church week after week and we talk about the glory of God and the beauty of the gospel and the call to live your life for Jesus. And we talk about all these things that are in the scriptures. But the big question is, yeah, but how? What does that mean I'm supposed to do tomorrow morning with my life when I wake up and my kids are going nuts trying to get out the door going to school and my other kids are screaming because they don't want to put on the socks that I chose from this morning and I have to be at work and I'm already 10 minutes late and there's this guy I work with that drives me absolutely nuts and he just gets on my last nerve and I get this nervous eye twitch every time I'm around him and I'm supposed to live out this thing called the Christian life there. How do I do that? And the deal is that we need to build some rhythms, some patterns, some things into our lives that help us live for the glory of God. I actually like this book. This is the fifth time I've read it. Every time I read the book, The Purpose-Driven Life, I am challenged again. I've read the first seven chapters. Hopefully that's where you're at if you started with us. You read chapter seven last night or this morning. In those seven chapters, I have found just gold. Things that have already reminded me, listen, there's some things that I've let grow stale. There's some things that I've let struggle. And I just need to kind of reinvigorate my faith. But along with that, I got a really good charge the other day as I walked into Alex's room and she'd come home from school. And her rhythm is that when she gets home from school, she goes right up and starts having her time with God. And she's been reading the book. I just said, what is this for you? And she said, you know, there's a lot in this book that maybe I kind of knew, but I hadn't really thought of it that way. And she had this big grin on her face, a way of letting me know that, listen, this is really helping me see things a little bit differently and challenging me. And so it was just really good to see that. My encouragement for you is that, first of all, if you're here, jump on board. Just start doing this with us. If you have kids, make sure that they have a copy of the book and that you're reading, especially teenage kids, that they're reading it as well, and talk to them about it. There is at the end of the book discussion questions. You might use that as you're sitting around the table. I've had somebody ask me this week, well, what if I'd like to do this with guys at work or with people that I hang out with, or if I'd like to do my own little group somewhere that's not Genesis? And the answer is at the end of the book, there are a bunch of discussion questions. You could just get copies of the book, give it to several friends and say, hey, we're going to meet once a week and just talk about this. Why don't you jump on and do this with us? You can sit around a lunchroom or other places and do that. But like I said, it's a really helpful book to say how. How do I do this thing called the Christian life? And last week we jumped in and just said, you know, God created us for his purpose. And that ultimately that purpose is that we live our lives for his glory. That literally he created us, he saved us, and he has called us to live for his glory. That our lives should have a direction that moves towards him and lives as a reflection of who he is. And this morning we're going to talk a little bit about what it means to live a life of worship. There's a story of a guy who was a concert pianist, and he played all over and was well known. He would gather huge crowds. And one day he was getting ready to play in this venue, and the place was packed. People came in from all over, paid money to come see him. He sat down, he began to play, and he's playing this amazing work of music, this whole long work of music. And everything he hit just seemed to be beautiful, to be wonderful. The crowd was silent in awe of what he was doing. And when he finished his piece of music or finished his concert, the entire crowd erupted in applause and cheers. They had enjoyed what he had done. But there was one guy sitting front center in a very front row who just sat there. And when the concert was over, he just folded his arms and kind of gave a glare of disapproval. And immediately the guy who played the piano just walked off stage. He was angry. He was frustrated. He was depressed. And one of his buddies came up to him and said, What is going on with you? For real, man. The whole crowd went nuts. The whole crowd enjoyed this. The whole crowd found pleasure in what you did. But one guy crossed his arms. One guy frowned at you. One guy acted like he disapproved. And that bothers you? How vain are you? And the pianist said, listen, you don't understand. The man sitting in the front row was the composer of the music I was playing. And on this night, I was literally playing for an audience of one. My goal was to play this music so that he thought it was beautiful and wonderful. Obviously, he did not. And the challenge I have for you, not that that's the way God is, we'll talk about that in a minute, but what worship really is, when we talk about worship, it's more than just music. It is literally getting to the point where we realize that we are living our whole life for an audience of one. We're talking about the purpose of worship. And it's in the book this week, if you're reading, you'll read a lot about what it looks like to live a life of worship. And so usually, you know, you hear, all right, we're going to talk about the purpose of worship. The first thing goes off in my head goes, okay, I got to get all my Chris Tomlin stuff downloaded on my iPod. And, you know, I got to listen to Joy FM and drive around and do nothing but sing a lot of songs. And, you know, while I'm driving around, raise my hands, just make sure nobody's looking, because if I raise my hand and somebody's looking, they'll think I'm weird. And I might even, you know, in a moment have a tear, just as long as nobody knows it. But, you know, I'll do this, you know, a bunch of music, bunch of songs, or I'll come to church, I'll come hang out and listen to music and sing the songs at church, and then I'm worshiping. We have this service, it's called a worship service, because the heart of it is worship. But most of the time when we think, or when I think worship, I think music, preaching, service, singing, lifting hands, praying, things like that. And those are ways that we worship. But that is not the core of what worship is. Worship is so much more than that. And what happens when you start reading the Bible, if you start reading the Bible as a story from cover to cover, you begin to see this idea of worship being a major, major theme. That all through the Bible, there's several things that keep being declared in the scriptures. And the first is that specific commands and calls to worship God are all throughout the Bible. Just you start reading the Bible and there are all these calls to worship the Lord your God, to love him only, to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And this call to worship him. There's an entire book of the Bible. The longest book in the entire Bible is the book of Psalms. 150 different songs, prayers, poems, that are literally every one of them is a call to us to worship. And you find things like magnify the Lord, glorify the Lord, let us give thanks together, let us worship the Lord together. You just hear this call all through scripture. And from cover to cover, there are cries to God's people that says, worship the Lord your God. Live a life with your lips and with your life of worship. But along with that, there are multiple warnings, clear, bold warnings to be very careful that we do not worship other things and other gods. And see, in America, we live in what, you know, we feel civilized. Well, we don't have, you know, an altar to some animal god out here, or we don't worship the sun. No, we're a lot more sophisticated in the way we do it. We bow down and worship things, and we become very spiritual with our approach, but we just don't call it worship. But we literally invest our lives in things that are not beautiful, not wonderful, not good. And so all through the Bible, these really clear commands. Exodus chapter 20, when God gives the Ten Commandments, the first commandment is to look to God and not worship anything else. And the second is don't make any idols. Now, all through the Bible, there's this really bold warnings away from what the Bible calls idolatry, which is worship of anything other than God. And the biggest idol we have is ourselves, that we literally tend to put ourselves on the altar and worship at the altar of me. Warnings not to worship anything or any God or anything other than God. But then the third thing that the Bible keeps telling us is that worship is always a response. That literally, the call to worship, like we say, listen, you need to worship. You need to live a life of worship. We go, okay, where does that begin? It doesn't begin with you. It is not me conjuring up in my mind some kind of emotion so that somehow I will look up to God and feel good about God. Worship begins with this clear understanding that there is a God who has acted and he has created everything. And in his creation, there is beauty and glory and his wonder is displayed in creation. And that if we were to look into creation and really look thoughtfully and intently, we should be awed at the one who made it. I umpired a couple baseball games, and it was beautiful yesterday, and I drove quite a distance to get there, and just through the hills in Missouri, and on the field, and looking at the greenness of the grass and the beauty of the sky, with the idea that we were talking about this morning, it gave me pause to stop and go, wow, there is a creator who's done this, and he is awesome, and it's not that I am conjuring up good thoughts about God in my mind. It's that I am looking at what he has done, and my heart, if I really will focus my attention on that, is awed to the acts of God, and it leads me to worship. The same happens when we really stare intently into the gospel. When we look deeply to Jesus, we see what he has done for us, and we see what it has accomplished in us, and we move away from just it's normal, mundane, boring, but we really look deeply, and we see what God has done, and our hearts respond with worship. And so all through the Bible, this command to worship God, to not worship anything else, but to always remember that our worship is a response. That the way to get to worship is to look at God's greatness and to go deeper and know him more. It will lead us to worship. And you begin to read the Bible, there are passages everywhere, just a few. Jesus is talking to Satan when he's being tempted, and Satan literally tempts Jesus to worship something other than the one true God. And Jesus responds to him in Matthew chapter 4, he says this, Jesus said to him, "Be gone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and only him shall you serve." Only worship the Lord your God. In Psalm chapter 22, this passage that is a call to worship says, "From you comes my praise in the great congregation. My vows I will perform before those who fear him. That the afflicted shall eat and be satisfied, that those who seek him shall praise the Lord. May your hearts live forever. All the ends of the earth shall remember and turn to the Lord, and all the families of the nations shall worship before you. For kingship belongs to the Lord, and he rules over nations." Here you see the psalmist saying, listen, my praise begins with you, and it's because I've seen that you are the king who rules over the nations. My response, our response, is that we worship you. And then in Psalm chapter 86, verses 8 through 10, just another passage. "There's none like you among the gods, O Lord, nor are there any works like yours. All the nations you have made shall come and worship before you, O Lord, and shall glorify your name. For you are great and do wondrous things, and you alone are God." Do you hear the cry to worship, the cry of worship? And what happens all through the Bible, cover to cover, is you find this kind of language, this kind of talk to worship God, not worship anything else, but that our worship is a response to God. And the question is, what does that mean? Okay, so live a life of worship. Well, it doesn't mean that, like I said, you sit around listening to worship songs all the time and that's all you do. It's so much more than that. And as Paul was writing the book of Romans, in Romans chapter 12, he just gives us a really great passage that gives us the core of what it means to live a life of worship, to live with an attitude of worship, to live with hearts that are transformed by worship. So if you have a Bible, turn over to Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. If you don't have a Bible in your rows, we have Bibles for you. We'd love for you to take one of those, read along with us. Page 811 in that Bible. We're going to read these two verses, and we're going to talk about what's going on here and what it says about living out God's purpose of worship, or literally living in the center, creating a channel or a deep attitudes and disciplines in my life that help my heart glorify God by living a life of worship. Romans chapter 12. He says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what the will of God is, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Now, a couple of things about this passage. First of all, in fact, the title of this message and the title of this week's material in the book is that we are created for God's pleasure, living the purpose of worship. That literally, you were created to bring God pleasure. God made you for his joy. He made you to enjoy you. Much like a parent enjoys their children, there's one level that God just, if you are his son, if you are his daughter, if you know Christ, if you've given your life to him, you are accepted, you are loved, and God finds joy in you. You learn that with your kids. That it's just, it's fun to watch your kids be your kids and to live in your house and to do things that you find it funny, you find it beautiful. It's a joy to watch them when they play sports. It's a joy to watch them when they pass milestones and just doing the things that kids do as part of your family. You find joy in them. But you also find great joy in your children when they come to the point where they look at you and they realize that you as their parents have invested a lot in their life, and they live with gratitude, and they live with a desire to honor you and please you too. And so on one level, there is nothing that my children could do that would make me not accept them, not love them, and not find pleasure in them. But on a totally different level, there are things that they do that brings me great joy. You get that? And in the same way, if you're a follower of Jesus, God is pleased with you. He is pleased with you because of Jesus Christ and because he has adopted you into his family and he loves you. But as his children, there are things that we do that bring him joy and bring him pleasure. And our lives are literally created for that. And look at what he says. He says, I appeal to you by the mercies of God. Look at the end. Holy and acceptable God, which is your spiritual worship. Then down at the bottom of the next verse, it says, testing you may discern the will of God, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. The word acceptable there is the same word in the original language that literally means to bring pleasure to someone. He says, present your body as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasurable to God. It pleases God. Don't be conformed to this world. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And you'll experience the will of God that brings him pleasure, that brings him joy, that in our worship, literally as we live a life of worship, and we figure out what this passage means, literally our lives then will be lives that bring joy to our Father. And we are created for that. And so he talks about the idea of presenting our bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable. And he begins by saying, I appeal to you by the mercies of God. Now, to understand that, you got to understand all of Romans. And this morning, I don't have time to explain all of Romans, but let me just make it simple. The entire book of Romans, chapter 1 through chapter 11, is about the gospel. In other words, what Paul has done is he has said for 11 chapters, he's just beat this continual drum that says, we have nothing to offer God. Our sin has left us guilty before him, but God has done so much for us. He has sent his son. He has given us new life. He has changed us. There's no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. The gospel is the heart of the entire book of Romans. And then he says, I now urge you, now that you've heard all this beautiful story, the wonderful message of Jesus, I urge you because of that. I challenge you. I double dog dare you. I triple dog dare you by the mercies of God. The mercies of God. He says it is all a response to what God has already done. Stare into the gospel. Stare into the mercy of God. Find beauty in creation. Understand God as your creator, as your redeemer. And as you stare into that, Paul is now saying, because of what God has done, here's how we respond. I urge you by the mercy of God to present your bodies as a living sacrifice. And this is what he's going to tell us in this passage. He's going to tell us, here's what worship is. Worship is two things. The first thing is worship is sacrifice. It is what I give my life to. It is what I offer myself to. Worship is sacrifice. Whatever I give my life to, that is what I am worshiping. And he says, I urge you, therefore, because of God's mercies, I stare at God's mercy, present, give, offer your body as a living sacrifice that is wholly acceptable to God, which is your act of worship. Do you see that? He says, this is worship. When you present your body. Now, when he's talking about body, you got to understand the rest of Romans has been dealing with the heart, the soul, who you are on the inside. And so when he says present your body, he's basically saying you're going to take all of you and you're going to crawl on an altar. You're going to take everything that you are and give yourself to the one who has given you his mercy. That worship is giving all of me to all of him for his purpose and his glory. That literally I'm dying to myself and living for him. That I'm giving myself as a living sacrifice to the one who has poured his mercy in my life. And that's what worship is. And he says, you know, it's what you sacrifice to. In the Old Testament, this is really important to understand this passage. In the Old Testament, God gave the Hebrew people all kinds of different sacrifices that they were supposed to do. There are sacrifices that are for specific types of sin. There are sacrifices that are for all the people on a given day for all the sin of the year. There are sacrifices that were for sin that, like, if your kids had sinned and you knew it, you'd come make sacrifices. But at the end of the day, there were two basic subcategories. There were sacrifices of atonement and sacrifices of thanksgiving. Sacrifices of atonement would be when they brought an animal and they would offer it on the altar as a substitute, something that would die in their place. And the offering of the animal, God would accept that as the death for the sin that I had done. So I deserve sin, but God would accept the sacrifice of an animal in my place as an atonement for my sin. The other type of sacrifice in the Old Testament were sacrifices that were brought to God as people saw the beauty of what God had done and what who he was and all these things. And they would then offer sacrifices of thanksgiving to God because of the beauty that God had done in their life. This is really important because if you read this verse, you understand that, and you do the first thing, you begin to offer your body as an atoning sacrifice. In other words, here's what you do. You come to God and say, okay, God, I will do the best I can, and I'm going to give myself to you, and I'm going to keep a bunch of rules, and I'm going to follow your ways, and I will trust you, but I will go to church, and I will do all this stuff for you. And hopefully, by doing all this stuff for you, you will look at me and go, okay, I'm okay with you. I love you because you did this, this, and this. If that's the type of sacrifice we offer, we're literally trying to offer our own life as an atonement or as a way to be okay with God. That type of sacrifice is absolutely rejected by God. The first 11 chapters of Romans have this one clear theme, that Christ is the atoning sacrifice, that God has already offered himself as the one who gave himself so that we could have access to God, so that we could know God, so that we could meet God. And so when he says worship is offering yourself as a living sacrifice, it's not, God, I'm giving myself to you so that you will be okay with me. It's looking at God. It's actually a thanksgiving offering. It is offering myself as an offering of thanksgiving where I look at God and go, you have done so much for me. Your mercy is so beautiful. You have paid for my sin. You have died on the cross. And because of that, I now give all of me, my body, my soul, everything that I am. I am now going to crawl on an altar and give myself away and live as a living sacrifice. I'm not going to die, but I am going to die to me. and I sacrifice, I give myself to you. And realize that in terms of worship, when we say worship is what I sacrifice to, what I give myself to, we all have something that we are giving ourselves away to. There's something in our life that I pursue that I think is ultimate, that I literally give my life to. And what the gospel is saying, what Paul is saying, what worship is all about is that I look at the greatness of God, and in response to his mercy, I begin to see that the only thing that's worth giving my life to is Jesus. And I give my life to him. But he also says it's not only sacrifice, it's also shaping. In verse two, he says, "And do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, that which is good and acceptable and perfect." He says, don't be conformed. It's literally put into a mold. It's like a Jell-O mold. You pour the Jell-O in, it firms up, and it takes on the shape of the mold. Don't be conformed to the pattern of this world, but be transformed. The word there is the Greek word that we get metamorphosis from. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. He says, here's the deal. Worship is, first of all, what you sacrifice, what you give yourself to. Second, worship is you worship whatever you were shaped by. Whatever shaped your life, whatever mold you were formed into, that is what literally you were worshiping. And so we can come here and sing a whole bunch of songs. We can even lift up our hands. We can even get teary-eyed sometimes, and we can go through our lives and say we're worshiping, but if you are not giving yourself to Jesus, all of you to Jesus, and if you are not being shaped by Jesus and by the gospel, you are not living a life of worship. You may be worshiping with your lips, but you will be like the people in the Old Testament where God says, listen, you worship me with your lips, but your hearts are far from me. We don't want to be those people. We want to be people who are giving ourselves to Jesus. Literally, the flow of our life is towards him. And we want to be the type of people that it is God through the scriptures, through preaching, through living in community, through living a life of worship. God is molding us and shaping us into the image of Jesus. And so whatever you give yourself to, your sacrifice, whatever is shaping you, whatever is molding you, that's who you worship. That's what you worship. Now think about that. Just think of that grid. If you're to be honest this morning, I mean, somebody were to come and say, all right, honesty time. We're going to come up here. Everybody gets a chance to come up to a microphone. What do you worship? What do you most sacrifice to? What do you most give yourself to? What most shapes you? A life of worship is a life where I begin to see the greatness of God and the beauty of his mercy and the wonder of his creation. And I begin to give myself, sacrifice. I begin to let Jesus shape me. And I do that for a lifetime. Now, it's really easy to stand up here and preach this and say, that's what worship is. Therefore, I've got it all together. And every moment, every day, all the time, this is the way I live my life. Not even close. So what has to happen? What has to happen for us, if you are a follower of Jesus, is that we have to work really hard to start developing rhythms, attitudes, ideas in our life that take us there. And worship will always involve four things, really fast. Four things that will happen as we begin to create rhythms and create this is a channel in our life, something that is going on all the time for us, and we are growing in it. The first thing is it involves attention. We need to have focus on the one we worship. We have to let our mind think and dwell on who Jesus is, on the beauty of the mercy of God on the cross. We will not give ourselves as a living sacrifice because of the mercy of God if we never look at the mercy of God. We will not be awed at creation if we never intentionally stop and look up and go, wow, and then give mental effort into thinking of the one who gave us this. It takes us intentionally giving attention to the one we worship, to the one who is calling us. It takes us being clear and working really hard to move in that direction. And husbands, you get this, okay? At some point, every dude who's married has this moment where you're like, I work for you. I go and you know, I work really hard at work and I do stuff around the house and I built that over there for you. And your wife looked right at you and says, yes, but you don't pay any attention to me. And you're like, yes, I do. I did that and that and that. She's like, yes, but that's not what I want. I want you to stop and I want you to look at me. I want you to talk to me. And you're like, I don't like talking to anybody. Why would I talk to you? And she will grab you by the cheeks, or she will look at you in the eye, or if it gets really bad, she will start crying. And she says, yes, but I want your attention. What does that mean? She wants you to focus on her, not on just doing stuff for her. All right, get that? And this is what we need. What needs to happen for God? Sometimes we get so busy. We go to church. We may read our Bible. We may do all this other stuff, but we don't stop and really say, "Man, this is about you, God. I want to know you. I'm focusing my attention on you." Second, it's our affections. The fact that we learn to figure out what it looks like to love the Lord our God with all our heart, our soul, our mind, and strength. It's not conjuring up love. It's looking at how much we are loved, being awed at that and responding by loving God back. It's our attention. It's our affections. Third, it's our affirmation. It's living a life of thanksgiving. That we literally take time to stop and notice and be awed at the things God has done and give thanks. And apply that to everything. That you know, as the old VeggieTales song, a thankful heart is a happy heart. That literally there is a life of thanksgiving. And that is part of our worship, that we're fixing our attention on Jesus, that we're, our minds are headed there. We're loving God with our heart as our affections, our love for God grows, that we grow in our thanksgiving. And then it's actions. It's literally living my life in obedience. That as I worship Jesus, oh, I love Jesus. All right, do this. I don't think so. That's not love. It's living in obedience to what he tells us to do, living a life that is growing in my obedience. It's also learning a very important truth, that everything I do in life, ultimately I do it for him. This is what Colossians teaches us. Colossians says that whatever you do in word or in deed, do it in the name of the Lord as if you were doing it for the Lord. So here you go. You go to work on Monday morning and your boss is just horrible and your job is a grind. You're like, how do I live a life of worship here? And the answer is you've got to come to the point where you realize that you have a different boss. You don't work for that guy ultimately. You have a teacher and the teacher is, you know, I mean, just they talk in a monotone for the whole hour in a lecture and it's a math class, and math is from the devil anyway. Last time I said that, I got in trouble because we have a math teacher in here, but sorry about that. And you're like, I hate the class, and I'm not going to do good here, and I just hate the teacher. It's coming to the point where you realize that ultimately you have a different boss, a different person that you were doing this for, and that we are sacrificing ourselves, giving ourselves to God, that we are allowing the message of the gospel to shape us, that we are giving attention, we are giving our affection, our love to Jesus, we are giving our affirmation that we are living a life of thanksgiving, and then we begin to live our lives practically in ways that show actions that say, God, you are most important in my life, and I will, not just by coming to church on Sunday, but the way I live my life, I'm going to live as a person who is on the altar. And this is what we want to do in this series. What we want to do is we kind of want to lay the grid work, and some of the times we're going to have, instead of me just standing up here and lecturing, we're going to have some people come up and just kind of say, okay, what does this look like? That sounds good, but what does it look like? This morning, Matt and Sarah are going to come up. Matt Stein and Sarah Satchel are going to come up. They're going to help me out with this, and they're going to share a little bit with you. They're going to come up here and grab a seat on these stools. Matt and Sarah are members here, and they're engaged, and they're awesome young people. They're going to tell you a little bit about their lives, but I'm going to kind of interview them and interact with them about what it looks like to live all of life as worship in their lives, okay? All right, it's on. Cool. So just tell us a little bit about yourselves and what's going on in your life and just what that looks like for you.
All right, well, if you don't know me, my name is Matt Stein, and I'm from the area. I'm actually a student right now in Memphis. So I'm just in for a week. So I don't know if I'm the best to ask about these different disciplines or just how to do this, but I'll give it a shot. And this is Sarah.
Hi, I'm Sarah, and I'm a student right now. And we were joking that I should say that, and I like math because I'm a nerd. But
everybody all together. Very cool. So what does it look like? I mean, just real practically, what does it look like for you to live all of life as worship?
I know for me, living for 2 years with a house full of girls, it's really easy to just have a bad attitude or get frustrated. So just talking about this last night, like figuring out ways to like feed my spirit instead of my flesh. So when I'm annoyed that there's been dishes in the sink for my roommate for 2 weeks instead of having bad attitude and taking that on her, like out serving, changing your motives and your thoughts to be like you were saying, like it's not about us, and my boss isn't my flesh anymore. And so if that means doing the dishes and buying her favorite candy bar instead of having an attitude all week, that's worship instead of just feeding my flesh constantly.
I guess just practically for me, it took a while to kind of figure out. I knew what I wanted to do. And just, it did take a lot of actually building some disciplines. But when we talk about the idea of just what is it like, what does it mean to worship? I mean, you just view it as that all of your life is worship. And so I'm just trying to think. The way I kind of thought about that is it's more, in my opinion, just about being able to live in the light of your Lord, whatever you're doing. Because a lot of times we do a really, I think, crude job of separating work and family life from church life and that kind of thing, and that's not the biblical idea at all. It's supposed to be that everywhere you go, no matter what you're doing, you're supposed to be living for the Lord and growing in that, and there's some practical things that we can do for that too.
All right, this is off, a little off topic, but what are some disciplines that you do in your life that help you maintain the rhythm of life as worship?
I know that everybody has different schedules. Some people work at different times and all that kind of thing. But I really think that two simple things, and then how you can kind of apply that, is obviously prayer and reading the word is something that you need to be in every day. But how you go about that can be different. I like to get up in the morning. Some people like it to read the Bible at night. But I really found that when I just get my mind right and then I pray and read the word in the morning. And usually the way I read the word now is I don't really do it independently. I actually follow along with what our church is doing down in Memphis, because I've found if I know that we're going through a book, which is the advantage I think for them, they go through books down there when they preach, is that I can just read all around that area, and at least I have some kind of, I have an ESV study Bible that when I don't know what the heck's going on, I can reference to. There was something else I was going to mention too, is as far as prayer goes, I'm not really plugging books, but there's a book that I read that was very good. It's called The Praying Life by a guy named Paul Miller. And it helped me realize just the major thing is that with prayer, you always kind of say these holier-than-thou prayers, but really what has helped me the most has been able to realize that during the course of the day and with the constant go and the technology and stuff that we have going on, you can get distracted. How to be able to just say a quick prayer, and it's almost like you're communing with the Lord as you're going through your day.
Cool. Well, how is Sunday worship a part of this? And what are the things that you do to get your thoughts Godward in this time?
Going off what Matt said, it's just during the week finding ways to still be in the Word with your church. So if we're walking through a book of Bible, dig into that and find ways to implement that in your week and study it and pray over it and talk about it. And then also just pray for your church and just be a person that wants to come here and it's just another way of living out life. It's not just something we come to on Sundays, but this is family, and this is just praying over what we're studying and what we're doing. And that's worship. That's a way for us to just be more than, it's more than just worship, a worship service. So.
And I would also add to that, too, is that as you look through Romans 12, like what we just looked at, is that the world has this system where we get, some people only get one day off, some people get 2 days off, you know, however it works for you, but it said that those days off are the days that are for me and my extracurricular activities. And when you talk about idolatry, and you talk about, not that things are, you know, it's not wrong to have your kids play sports for you to like to go bowling or read or do whatever, just saying.
You like the bowl?
What?
You do like the bowl?
Yeah, I do. Kirk Allen and I, back in the day, you know, they give me free coupons for years, but is he here? No. All right. Yeah, but anyways, I was just going to say, with that, what I found, though, is the church, historically, Sunday, if you go back to like some early American church, like John Edwards and those kinds of guys, they built their whole week around the Sunday sermon. I'm not saying you have to be, but it was the idea of, Saturday night, a lot of the people, or whatever day they had it on, they would rest. You know, they wouldn't be out till, 1 or 2 in the morning or whatever it might be. That's the time for you to regroup, for you to get, not just rest for the work week, but rest in the Lord and rest in who he is and reflect on him and where you're at. And I think that the idea of having times like that every week and maybe every one afternoon, every couple of months or whatever it is for you, to just sit back and take a step back and ask, am I living for what I've been reading, or am I living for the culture and going along with whatever everybody else does?
Cool. How's your relationship in active worship? What does that look like?
You want to take that one?
Okay. I know for a girl, it's really easy to just find your identity in a relationship, and that's kind of what the world tells us to do. And so especially in a long-distance relationship, it's been just a training process of my mind to make sure my identity's not in Matt, and I still have to have a relationship with Jesus first. And but then also, our relationship is designed to glorify Jesus, so it's not about being satisfied or being happy necessarily all the time, but it's making each other more like Christ.
And obviously, we have a long way to go. We're not even living in the same place yet, so we've got some things I'm sure we'll learn quickly when we do get married. But I would just say, too, practically, and this would be more for younger people or younger, more recently married people, too, as I'm sure we've learned, but I think it's important that since we're away, we're trying to kind of get ourselves into as good of a rhythm as we can individually, and then when we talk, every day and that kind of thing, so that when we are together, we also have established a few things that'll be a smoother transition, hopefully. And then I view, because marriage is, it says in the Bible that, the marriage, it has been before the beginning of time. Jesus says that, it's an example of Jesus in the church. And that's kind of the mystery, it calls it, is that marriage, Adam and Eve, it's actually was put in place to show Christ in the church. So how can, for instance, for me, as a guy, how can I best, prepare, for us going forward and just with school and all that stuff? And then how can she prepare to be a wife and mother? And those are just kind of things that we're just thinking through.
Very cool. Very good. All right, just last question for you. What are some things a person could do to keep their focus in life, to be a life of worship in their job, in school, in their leisure, things like that? Just any practical advice on what that might look like?
I'll just say real fast a couple of things. One is I would recommend, if you can, instead of once, I know life's crazy for a lot of people here, but once maybe every 6 weeks or so, let everybody have a time by themselves just to sit back and just establish, think of where they are spiritually and those kinds of things. And don't just go with the flow, but maybe take some time to step back. Practically speaking, a lot of people commute, and so they have a long car ride. How can you redeem simple things, like simple blocks of time, like 20 minutes, 30 minutes that you have in the commute? And I would recommend, you can get free sermons from like a billion different people that are really good. You can have, I know Mr. Lancaster told me one time he listens to the Bible in his car, and that helps because he drives all over the place. Just simple ideas like that, how can you redeem that time? And maybe that is your Bible reading for the morning, and that's a good way to do it.
Very cool.
I would just say just praying over seeking approval of Jesus and not yourself or not people. So whether that's how you interact at work or at school or in relationship with family life. So just being someone that's finding their identity in Jesus. So that's prayer, that's digging into the word, that's meditating on it, and finding ways to, during the day, just memorize it. Even if it's at lunch, just reading over a psalm, or just finding ways to make that the forefront of your mind, because there's so many things in our world that we spend time doing mindlessly, and so redeeming those mindless minutes that we spend on our iPhones or on Facebook or doing those things, and not that those things are bad, but just weighing our what we're doing with our time. So.
Very good. Thanks, guys. Some really good thoughts. Hey, I'm going to close my time with just a couple practical, okay, what does this look like kind of stuff. You heard some from them, just some what does it look like kind of stuff. And just three real quick scenarios. First scenario is, how do I do this when I don't feel like it, okay? Because if all of life is supposed to be worship, there are times where, whether it's because of sin in my life or whether it's because life is really hard or I've had hardship or I'm cold, it just like my faith is kind of cold and dead and distant. And I think the answer to that is that worship is actually the way up, and it's the way out. In other words, that I choose in those times when I don't feel like it, I'm even more intentional about focusing my attention on the greatness of God, that I stop, like Matt said, and I take some time specifically for that. I don't let the rhythms of life and the busyness of life to completely crowd it out, but I'm intentionally taking a few minutes or a few hours or a day to set aside and to think on God, and I'm intentionally saying, what does it look like to love Jesus? And I'm intentionally thinking about, what does it mean to be thankful? What do I have to be thankful of? And I'm intentionally saying, what are some actions I need to take? What are ways that I need to grow in my obedience? That literally, when I don't feel like it, the way up to the glory of God is worship. And then it's also the way out, that when I, as I worship towards the glory of God and I see it more clearly, it then will inspire my heart to worship. All right. Second scenario is, what do I do with the stuff in my life? I mean, can, you know, my children and sex and kids sports, they can, I mean, these things, school, success, these can all be idols. They can become the objects of my worship. Well, does that mean that I go live a life as a monk? I go get a monastery and do nothing but eat, you know, cold porridge and water and sit and read the Bible and pray all day while I hum in a really weird vibrato, you know, kind of tune? Well, no. Actually, God calls us to enjoy the things he made. And so how do we do that? What does it look like for all the stuff to actually be acts of worship? Now, I just have to tell you that Diet Dr. Pepper is absolutely the perfect soda, okay? I mean, it literally is a beautiful thing. I have my 2 liter of Diet Dr. Pepper up here, and Diet Dr. Pepper, I mean, it's like 13 different flavors of fruit perfectly embedded into a soda flavor that is just amazing. How can I enjoy Diet Dr. Pepper? Oh, that's good. That's good. How can I enjoy Diet Dr. Pepper as an act of worship? You're like, okay, that's kind of weird. But literally, if all of life is worship, this is what I'm called to. And I think with Diet Dr. Pepper representing anything else in your life or my life, the first thing is to realize that it's a gift from God. That the 13 wonderful fruity flavors and the ability to make soda. 23, is that what it is? See, I don't even have the 23 wonderful flavors and the ability to make the liquid, and it's even zero calorie. And some will say that what makes it zero calorie while making you skinny could give you cancer, but there's even something to realize there that is a gift from God that will make me see him sooner. That everything that is in here that is worth enjoying is literally given by him. He made it. He created it. It's from him, and therefore I enjoy. Because it is a gift. I see Diet Dr. Pepper literally, while whatever bottling company made this, formed it. It is a gift from God for my enjoyment. And I enjoy it as a gift from him. But then I also enjoy it in such a way that I give thanks to him. That I honor him. That literally, I, you know, while I'm not necessarily driving down the road every time I drink a Diet Pepper going, oh, thank you, Jesus. But there are times, I'm saying, there are times. That my heart understands it's a gift I'm living for Thanksgiving, but then I always remember that this is not to become the all-consuming purpose of my life. And I don't begin to allow Diet Dr. Pepper or whatever it is to crowd out Jesus and replace Jesus. You get that? That's what it looks like to worship. Now, plug in your children, your job, sex, sports, in all those places, drink. Enjoy them as a gift of God. Celebrate the gifts that God has given you. Give thanks and live in worship and thanksgiving because God has given you these things as gifts. But don't let them replace God and replace Jesus in your life and live in obedience to God with those areas. All right, last area, Sunday morning. Come to church. What does it look like? And real quick, the bottom line is, I'm just intentional that this is a good time for me to rethink and reorganize and reprioritize attention, affection, affirmation, thanksgiving, and my actions. And so I don't know if you have boys. Eventually, you built one of those racetracks that has one of those little wheels, and the car kind of goes around a racetrack, and it comes back, and it hits the wheel, and it takes off again. And if it stays on the track, literally, that thing will go forever. And it takes. You know what I'm talking about? Sunday is that wheel that we're supposed to live a life of worship, staying on the track. But what happens is you go, you begin to lose traction, you begin to slow down, you begin to lose energy. And what happens is you come back around on Sunday and you come in here and we sing and we read the scripture and we pray and we worship and we preach and we do all these things. And it's a call and back to Jesus is the center of our life. And it's like that wheel that just zoom and it sends you out again. And so what you do is you prepare your heart to come in here for that. And then when you are here, you lift up your affections. You literally lift up your love and your praise to Jesus with all of you. I urge you to live your life as a living sacrifice and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. This week, be challenged to live a life of worship. It is part of God's purpose and is the way we give him glory. I'm going to pray. The band's going to come out. We're going to sing songs of worship to celebrate our God. Lord, we love you. We praise you. Lord, we literally praise you for all that you do. And we give thanks to you. Lord, everything in our life, the beauty of creation, the wonder of Diet Dr. Pepper, the joy of our children, just the air we breathe, you created it and they are gifts. And we are sinful, rebellious people who need the gospel, but you have given us your mercy. Lord, help us to be people who intentionally give our attention to staring into your greatness and respond with great worship. Help us live the purpose of worship in our life, starting now, starting this week, to be intentional about digging a deep trough into our lives of worship. In your name I pray. Amen.